I want to share with you tonight, as we prepare to remember the crucifixion, as we focus on that, there is just so much that the crucifixion and things that happened during the crucifixion, where they came from and why they're important. And so we're going to have a little history lesson, as it were, about God and his relationship with mankind. And so if you'll bear with me for a few minutes, we'll kind of set the stage of how God has connected with his people. And then we'll see how the crucifixion ties that all together. So if you'll join me, I want to back up that God, when he entered the world in relationship, he chose a man named Abraham, and he chose his family. So we know Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they ended up in Egypt, 400 years of oppression. And when God called them out, using the prophet Moses to do so, he called them out into the wilderness, and he gave them the law, and he entered into a relationship with them where he said, I will be your God, and you will be my people. And so he started with a tabernacle. They were out in the wilderness, and so it needed to be transportable and mobile and so forth. And so if you look at the tabernacle, it was this tented area. And as you enter from what is the right side, that's the east side, generally speaking, you walk in, and there's this huge altar. It's referred to as a brazen altar, and that's where the sacrifices were made. And just beyond that, you see in this drawing a somewhat small bath, a laver, a collection of water. It gets larger in this as the story goes on. We're going to look at several pictures today that are just artist's renditions, so bear with their imagination and your imagination about what this really looked like. But that water was where the priests would clean themselves ceremonially so that they'd be ready to serve God, and they'd be ready to enter the temple proper. And so in the back of that section, you see kind of two compartments. The first one they walk into would be called the holy place, or the sanctuary. And in that sanctuary, there were a few things we're going to talk about in just a minute. And then behind that is the holy of holies. And it's a little bit smaller. And so this is the tabernacle. And in the tabernacle, there were generally, in the holy place, there were at least three pieces of furniture. Right in front of this wall before the Holy of Holies, there was an altar of incense. And this, you can see, is just kind of wrapped in yellow. The real one was wrapped in gold. But in the Holy of Holies, I started in the wrong place. The first thing is the table of the presence. This table over here, again, you know, we couldn't afford to wrap it in gold, so it's in plastic. But it was the place where the bread was brought. Every week, every Sabbath, fresh bread was brought and placed in God's presence. And next Sabbath, that would be taken away and fresh would be taken there. And the priests would eat the bread that had been presented to God. And so we have over here this altar, or not an altar, the table of the presence. Again, all gold, gold poles, everything was carried with poles. On the opposite side of the sanctuary is a lampstand, and this just kind of represents it. We didn't have one that was a floor-standing model. In fact, we don't have any dimensions of what the lampstand looked like except 75 pounds of beaten gold. That's the only description. We know about it had flowers and lamps and so forth and a place to put the oil, but we don't know how wide it was, how tall it was. And then the third thing is this altar of incense, again with the poles to carry it, again wrapped in gold. And this part of the temple process was every day, morning and evening, the priests would come and offer incense on this altar. That the holy place would be filled with incense, filled with the smell, the smoke represented God's presence. But behind what was a curtain, a veil, in the Holy of Holies was the Ark of the Covenant. And again, this is just one artist's rendition of what it looks like. It was a box in which were the stone tablets that Moses received the law on. And it was covered with this mercy seat that had cherubim that faced one another. This is just one rendition of it. But that was in the Holy of Holies, and no one was allowed to go in there except once a year, the high priest. And he could only go if he washed properly, wore the proper clothes, carried in the blood of a bull, carried in the blood of a goat, carried in incense that he would throw into a censer, which was a carrier of coals from the altar, so that the Holy of Holies was filled with smoke, and the priest would not be able to see where God was dwelling in the mercy seat. So that's at the tabernacle level. And they traveled with that, and they set it up in Shiloh, and they moved it around in various places. And David wanted to build a temple. But David wasn't allowed to build the temple because he had been a man of war and he had shed blood, and so his son Solomon built a temple. Again, a diagram kind of showing the overall view of the temple. Again, this brazen altar, this is now 15 feet tall. So there's stairs going up to it, and on top of that is the altar where the offerings are made. In this diagram, behind it is that laver, 7.5 feet tall, 15 feet diameter, full of water, 11,000 gallons of water that the priests would be able to wash in as they prepared to serve. To the north of that, if we're looking into the temple, to the north of that, in the ground, there were 24 little rings, which is where the sacrificial animals would be tied in preparation for their sacrifice. So this is all the temple proper. And then you'd go in and there would be the same, there's a porch. And so we're going to start from this side and work out. In the very inside of the temple, this is even the larger view of it. But we have the Holy of Holies. When Solomon built it, the ark was there. And the ark was kind of central there. And the location where the temple was built, do you know what else happened there? This is also called Mount Moriah. It's understood that this is where Abraham nearly sacrificed Isaac. It's also where there was a plague one time. David had taken a census and he had counted the people of Israel when he had been told not to, and a plague came and it was a traveling. You could see the darkness coming and it stopped at this place. And David bought the threshing floor of Arana, Ornan the Jebusite, and he built an altar there and he offered sacrifice to God, thanking him for stopping that plague, which killed, I think, 70,000 Israelites. That all happened in the same place where now Solomon has built the temple around that spot and placed the Ark of the Covenant. Solomon also built two 15-foot cherubim, 15 feet tall, 15-foot wingspan, so that one touched one wall, touched the other wingtip to the other wall, and the Ark of the Covenant sat beneath them. Olive wood covered in gold. The floor was covered in gold. The ark was covered in gold. The walls, the ceiling, everything was in gold because this was a place to worship God. From the Holy of Holies, he entered into the holy place, 30 feet wide. The Holy of Holies is 30 feet wide, 30 feet deep, 30 feet high. The holy place is 30 feet wide, 60 feet. And beyond that, there's a 30-foot porch. Outside that is where the water is, that laver. The brazen altar is there. This is all in the temple compound. Beyond that, there's the court of the priests, another 20 feet. Then the court of the Israelites, another 20 feet, of those men who were ritually pure. Beyond that, and more steps down, because this is the peak, this is Mount Moriah, as more steps down into the court of the women. And so in this diagram that you see now, that the tall building is the temple. This is Solomon's temple. It's 45 feet tall. What you can't see behind that first wall is the court of the priests, the court of the Israelites, but in the larger square is the court of women. It's not limited to women, but that's as far as women were allowed to go. The most holy, the most sacred, only the high priest once a year. The holy place, only priests and Levites who were serving. Then the court of priests, then the court of Israelites, but they had to be ritually pure. Then the court of women, and beyond that, the large area is the court of Gentiles. For most of us, that's as far as we would ever be able to get in terms of approaching this holy, holy God. Again, just a different angle of it. The big square in front there, the court of women in the corners, there's the treasury. There's actually a place for lepers there. People who were ceremonially unclean could come as far as the court of the women, those who were Jewish at least. But the court of the Gentiles is that larger place that you and I would be only opportunity, that would be our only opportunity to enter. So as we come back in, court of the Gentiles, court of the women, court of the Israelite men who are pure, court of the priests, the temple complex where you had to be dressed properly, washed properly, on duty. The priests had actually been broken up into 24 different rounds, and so you'd serve 1 week in the spring, so to speak, and 1 week in the fall, but everybody would be there for Passover. And so as we look at Jesus' crucifixion, it takes place when everybody's there. So we enter in through all of that. We enter into the holy place, the incense altar, the lampstand, the bread of the presence, and the Ark of the Covenant. The representation of God Himself present with His people during the time of the tabernacle. As they moved, God showed His presence as a pillar of fire or as a pillar of cloud, and He'd rest there over the Ark. So Solomon built this beautiful, beautiful place. Years later, Babylon came in, tore it down, took the gold things to Babylon. At that point, the Ark of the Covenant kind of disappears from history. Hence the theme behind Raiders of the Lost Ark. Where did it go? Where is it now? But Herod, well, the people who came back from exile, Ezra, Nehemiah, and so forth, they rebuilt the temple, and they reestablished the Holy of Holies, but there was no Ark of the Covenant. Then many years later, right before Jesus comes to earth, King Herod rebuilds again. Instead of 45 feet tall, it's 60 feet tall. But as far as we understand, the Holy of Holies was left in that dimension, 30 feet by 30 feet by 30 feet, a cube wrapped in gold. So this is the temple that Jesus probably never entered. He was not a priest. He was not a Levite. He probably could have come as far as the court of the Israelites. But there's this veil between the holy place and the Holy of Holies. There's a veil that different descriptions of it and people's different understandings of it, but 30 feet wide, 30 feet tall, perhaps 4 inches thick. And it was the thing that kept the priests from entering into God's presence. Again, the high priest only once a year, and that only properly prepared and only with blood of a sacrifice. And so this is the situation. The opportunity to approach God was limited down to this time of actually once a year, one person being able to come and offer a blood sacrifice to atone for his own sins, for the sins of the priests, for the sins of the people. And so this is the sacrificial system into which Jesus comes. And so we come now to his life and death. All of that background, the thing I want to focus on is this veil. There was a thing, there was a barrier between mankind and God. By God's design, don't cross this line. But it changes when Jesus comes. On the morning of Jesus' crucifixion, the Jews, they've already had this, what we might refer to as a kangaroo court, where they've accused him of all sorts of things. They brought in false witnesses. They couldn't get two people to tell the same story. But finally, they said, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he says, "You've said it." And they said, "Oh, we've heard it ourselves. He's guilty." And so they took him to Pilate, the Roman governor. And they asked that Pilate would kill him for these things. And Pilate said, "I find no grounds." Three different times, "I find no grounds to charge this man. I found no grounds for what you're charging him of. I find no grounds that he should be killed. He doesn't deserve the death penalty." Pilate attempts to placate them by having Jesus flogged. And this is not just to take him out back and spank him. I mean, this is skin off the bones, whipping, torture. And he brings him back again to the Jews and says, "Here's the man." They said, "Take him away. We don't want him." Well, every year Pilate had the opportunity to offer up one prisoner. "Would you take this man, who I just told you three times, there's no charge against him that should stand, would you take him or would you take Barabbas, an insurrectionist, a murderer? Everybody knows he's guilty. Who do you want me to release? Give us Barabbas." What would you do with Jesus? Crucify him. But he's done nothing wrong. Crucify him. But I find no grounds. Crucify him. Over and over again. Finally, Pilate concedes for Jesus to be crucified. So the governor's soldiers take Jesus into headquarters and they gather around him and they put a purple robe on him and they put a crown of thorns on him and they beat him on the head with reeds to drive that crown into his head and they mock him and they spit on him and they hit him. When they were all done making fun of him, then they stripped the robe off. Mind you, because of his flogging, the blood would be coagulating into the robe and now torn off. Tear all of that off, put his own clothes back on him, and led him away to crucify him. So he carried his own cross out to a place called Skull Place, which is also called Golgotha. And he starts on that, but he can't do it on his own, and so they force a man who's running, is walking nearby, a Cyrenian named Simon, and they make him carry Jesus' cross to Golgotha. Two other criminals are also led away to be executed with him, one on his right and one on his left. And when they're up on the crosses, the first thing that we have record of Jesus saying, the first thing Jesus says after he's been flogged, tortured, carried his cross, nailed to the cross, put up in the sky, the first thing he says is what? Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Pilate had a sign lettered and put up above the cross. It said, Jesus the Nazarene, the King of the Jews. And the Jews looked at that and said, he's not the King of the Jews. The chief priest went to Pilate and said, take that down, or at least make it say, he said he's King of the Jews. But Pilate says, no, what I've written, I've written. This is Jesus, King of the Jews. When the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes and divided it among them, four different pieces for four different soldiers as part of that squad. But there was one piece, the tunic that was a single piece. They didn't want to tear it. They didn't want to ruin it, so they cast lots for it. They gambled for his clothes because it fulfilled prophecy. They didn't do it for that purpose, but it did fulfill prophecy. They divided my clothes among themselves, and they cast lots for my clothing. So that's what the soldiers did. Those who were passing by shouted insults at him. The high priest, the priest, shouted insults. Hey, you saved other people. Save yourself. If you're King of the Jews, come down. Then we'll believe in you. The soldiers mocked him. They offered him sour wine. If you're King of the Jews, save yourself. Even those who were crucified with him mocked him. One of them hanging there beside him said, aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us. But the other criminal said, don't you even fear God since we're undergoing the same punishment? We're punished justly because we're getting back what we deserve for things we did, but this man has done nothing wrong. Again, there are no grounds for Jesus to be crucified. Even the criminals recognize that. And so he says to Jesus, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said to him, I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise. Standing by the cross are several women who have come from Galilee, including Jesus' mother. And when he sees her there, he looks at her, and right next to her is the disciple that Jesus loved. And he says, woman, behold your son. And to the disciple he says, behold your mother. And from that day forward, that disciple took her into his house as his own mom. He was crucified at 9 a.m, and now it's about noon. And at noon, a darkness came over the whole land until 3, because the sun's light faded. At 3:00, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? When some people standing there heard that, they thought he was calling out for Elijah. Maybe Elijah's going to come and save him. And at this point, everything's been completed. All the prophecies have been completed. They gambled for Jesus' clothes. He's done everything. All the prophecies are complete except one. And so Jesus says, I thirst. And they get sour wine on a sponge and they lift it up to him so that he can taste it. And when that is completed, all is done that that God had decreed in prophecy would happen when Jesus the Messiah came to die in our place. And Jesus said, "It's finished." And then he said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." As Jesus called out, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit," suddenly the earth quaked and the rocks split and the curtain of the sanctuary was torn from top to bottom. The barrier that God had defined that said only once a year, one man as a high priest can enter. Only in that way can one person have access to me, can stand before me. That barrier is removed at Christ's sacrifice, at his death. As Dana leads us in a song, it's called "Take Me Into the Holy of Holies." Past the brazen altar, through the people, through the priests that are singing praises, some of the Levites, their whole job was to sing. So I want to take this time to reflect on what God has done in tearing the veil top to bottom, 4 inches thick, top to bottom, 30 feet tall, top to bottom, torn and gone, broken in two. In a few minutes, we'll have an opportunity to receive the Lord's Supper from the Holy of Holies. Entering the Holy of Holies is no small thing. Approaching the Creator God who sacrificed his own Son that we might have access is no small thing. But just the same, I invite you to come. Properly prepared, properly washed with the proper blood, the sacrifice of Jesus. It is only through him that we have access to God. It is only because of his sacrifice that we can be forgiven of our sin, restored in relationship with him, reconciled, renewed. And in that, even though we are commemorating his crucifixion, we can celebrate with joy of what he's accomplished. So if Jeff and Dan as deacons will come to serve, I invite you at your leisure, at your timing, when you are ready, if you are ready, to come and participate. As you know, the bread represents Christ's body. The grape juice represents his blood shed for us. That blood that's necessary for us to have access to the Holy of Holies. We don't come as high priests. Jesus himself is our high priest. He sits now at the right hand of the Father, representing us to him. So as you come, perhaps as a family, I invite you to maybe get the elements and join together off in one of the side pews or something so that you can acknowledge what God has done for you, that you might know him, that you might be reconciled, that you might be restored, that you might be holy in his eyes, righteous, transformed in the image of Christ. So as Dana sings or as Olivia sings, when you're ready, come and participate in the body of Christ. Thank you.